Good morning. This is Chair Peter Fisher. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Behavioral Health Policy Division to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Good morning, Frederick.
Present.
Frankie.
Frankie, present.
Backer. Backer. Baker. Baker. Becker Finn excused. Hansen.
Hansen present.
Katiza Watoon.
Present.
Lippert.
Present.
Moeller.
Present.
Pearson.
Pearson present.
Thompson.
Thompson present.
Let's see. Backer. Baker.
Baker's present.
And Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Wonderful, thank you. With quorum established, we will move on to our first item of business, which is approval of the minutes from last Wednesday, March 3rd. Are there any questions or corrections to the minutes? Not hearing any, the chair would entertain a motion for approval.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Moeller moves the approval of the minutes for March 3rd, 2021. Please unmute for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, we've got three bills on our agenda today. The first two deal with licensing requirements for substance use disorder treatment facilities. And the last ones will bring us back to our earlier conversations about beds, the hospital beds for behavioral health.
Chair Fisher, yes. I am present. Representative Backer is here.
Okay, Representative Backer, thank you for checking in. We appreciate that. So we'll move on to our first bill. We're going to try to allot about 20 minutes for each bill through here, and we'll have some flexibility depending how things move and how quickly there are questions about the testimony. So our first bill on the agenda is House File 1299. I would like to spend about 20 minutes on this bill. Vice Chair Frederick, I see you have an author's amendment, but since I see that the underlying bill is basically a simple repealer and the amendment does go to a lot of length, I'd like us to focus first on presentation and talking a little bit about the underlying repealer. And I know you have a couple of testifiers there, so I'd like to hear from you about the repealer and take your testifiers, and then we can go and deal with the amendment, seeing your amendment does a lot of work there. So at this point in time, Representative Frederick, I will turn the things over to you for your presentation on your underlying bill.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. I move that House File 1299 be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee.
Okay, thank you, Representative Frederick, for moving that. Go ahead with your explanation of the underlying bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 1299 is what I'm here to talk about. And substance abuse is an issue that affects everyone, every location within the state. Every county has it. It's not specific to one geographic location or the other. House File 1299 talks or addresses how chemical dependency treatment facilities are able to get licensed and get established in different communities throughout the state. Currently, as that process entails that the applicant has to go to the county and get a letter of need or basically request the county to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down and kind of give an explanation, or the county can just choose to ignore it if they wanted to. What my bill does is eliminate that need the need to go to the county to request a thumbs up or a thumbs down, because chemical substance abuse is something that already exists in every part of the state. This is also a piece where the amendment comes into play, but we can talk about that later. But the idea is that to help streamline the process, we do want to keep the counties involved in this process, which is again where that amendment comes into play. But I would, at this time, turn it over to my testifiers.
Okay, certainly. Thank you, Representative Frederick. First person I have on the list here is Mr. Brian Zerbes. Mr. Zerbes, if you'd like to identify yourself, who you're with, and begin your testimony, please.
Thank
Thank you, Chair Fisher, members of the committee. My name is Brian Zervas, the Vice President of North Star Behavioral Health, a provider of substance disorder services in the state of Minnesota. I'm also here representing MARCH, the Minnesota Association of Resources for Recovery and Chemical Health, a professional association of addiction professionals and organizations that strive to raise awareness about addiction and the power of recovery. We represent more than 75 agencies and a workforce of more than 4,000 individuals in the state. Our goal is to improve access to quality behavioral health services for all Minnesotans who need support and share the value of long-term recovery for the individual, family, and communities we live in. House File 1299 repeals an administrative rule that requires substance disorder programs to determine the need for chemical dependency treatment or rehabilitation program as a part of the licensing process. As Representative Frederick had mentioned, state and national data show that around 1 in 10 people have a diagnosable substance use disorder, and only about 1 in 10 of those people actually access treatment. There's already a demonstrated need for substance use disorder in Minnesota counties. This requirement adds an additional administrative burden to substance disorder programs without adding value. MARCH members have experienced barriers and delays in opening programs due to this requirement. In a recent survey with membership, a little more than 40% had experienced challenges with this requirement. The language in the A1 amendment requires programs to notify the county human services director at least 60 days prior to application. This would allow the county's opportunity to be informed of providers' interests and coordinate as needed. MARCH has been meeting with the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators over the past few weeks to share our concerns with this process, and we're continuing to work on solutions with them. With that, I'd like to express my thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Zervas. We will then move on to Ms. Tammy Lewick. If you'd like to identify yourself, Ms. Lewick, and who you're with, and start your testimony, please.
Good morning, Chair Fisher and members of the committee. My name is Tammy Lewick, and I'm the Manager of Adult Services at Crow Wing County Community Services. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, MACSA, and the Minnesota Intercounty Association, MICA. Thank you for the opportunity to share some of our thoughts today on House File 1299. We appreciate the conversations that the providers have initiated with counties to discuss the concerns that they've outlined here today. We have offered to be a part of that work on what is contained in the letter of need to make it less burdensome. From the county perspective, the letter of need issue means more than just a symbolic gesture in the process of licensing of substance use disorder providers. Counties are uniquely tasked with being the mental health authority, which carries financial, systematic, programmatic, and human obligations. Counties strongly believe that all of our residents should have access to appropriate treatment options. We think it's only fitting that we be a part of the process as a new provider enters our communities. Part of this desire is financial. Counties are and will continue to be financially responsible for non-MA eligible individuals. We think counties should be involved at the outset of discussions with providers to avoid situations where we start receiving bills from providers that we have no knowledge of. Additionally, counties have a strong interest in assuring a full array of services is available within our counties. This allows compliance with court orders and child protection issues, which avoids incarcerations and out-of-home placements if compliance with court orders does not happen. Most importantly, however, is our strong belief that counties have some of the most comprehensive knowledge of community mental health needs and are responsible for contributing that expertise to benefit all of our residents. We do not believe the issues are widespread. In Crow Wing County, we welcome conversations with providers and have provider meetings to discuss our current array of services, as well as SUD reform in an effort to assure all services will be available to all of our residents. In Crow Wing County, SUD's providers have been very receptive to ongoing discussions, not just at time of licensure, to assure that we have that full array of services. Knowing what the community response and provider relationships are upfront can help to shape the exact services that a provider may offer to better tailor to the community need. That benefits both the provider and our communities. We also have concerns that this approach chips away at the work that the state, counties, and providers have been working toward with direct access and integrated care. To most efficiently provide that integrated care, we need to do more to ensure that we are all working collaboratively from the outset of the relationship to best identify service gaps and community needs. Removing the county letter of need or considering our involvement as a check-the-box exercise seems to head in the opposite direction. Counties recognize that there may be different interpretations of current law and how it is applied across counties. Counties prefer an administrative approach to providing statement of need versus county board approval, which is maybe much more formal and takes time and does create delays. As such, we agree there may be ways to modify the current law that does not create unnecessary burden on providers in seeking a letter of need, but balances the need for conversation with the county prior to licensure, which we believe produces the best network of services for our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lewick. Appreciate your testimony. So members, we still do have the author's amendment. Vice Chair Frederick, would you like to move your amendment and then have you or and your testifiers speak to it to help explain the amendment to us, please? Representative Frederick.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves the A1 amendment. Representative Frederick, if you'd like to go ahead and explain what the amendment does, and then we will take questions on it, and then we'll vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll talk briefly and then can turn it over. The bulk of the A1 amendment talks about change of ownership process, making sure that the facility can pass like state fire marshal and other building codes and things like that. I want to kind of point out the very, very bottom part of it, where it talks about at least 60 days prior to submitting application for licensure under the chapter, the applicant must notify the county human services director in writing of his intent. Basically, that language was added in there because to the previous testifier's point of that the counties need to be part of this process, I wanted to add that language to make sure that the counties are continuing to be part of this process. Because with that notification to the counties, they're able to provide the exact same feedback that they would to the commissioner saying that they're supportive, that they're not supportive, that they already have something in place, that maybe whatever the feedback that they want to provide that would be applicable in each individual circumstance, this is deliberately wanting to try to create that space for them to be able to provide that feedback and still be part of the process. But if either Brian or anyone else wants to comment on it.
Okay, Mr. Zerbis or Ms. Lewick, do you have anything you'd like to add? If not, then we'll go to questions. Not seeing anything to be added at the moment. I see Representative Frankie has his hand up. Representative Frankie, if you'd like to go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. My question is, how does the A1 amendment, does it allow the counties to have any say in the matter, or is it just a
You broke up there a little bit, Representative Frederick, right at the very end as you're asking your question. Could you ask it again, please?
Oh, sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frederick. The A1 amendment, did you work with the counties on this A1 amendment, and does it allow them any say in the matter going forward, or is this just simply a straight, here you go, here's a notification?
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Frederick, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The original bill just removed the letter of need altogether, and I wanted to make sure that the counties were still involved in the process to make sure that they were notified to be able to give them that opportunity to provide any sort of feedback that they wanted to provide, good, bad, or otherwise.
Representative Frederick. I'm sorry, Representative Frankie, do you have further questions?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll just get the bill in the shape the author wants.
All right, thank you, Representative Frankie. I see Representative Thompson has his hand up. Representative Thompson, go ahead, please.
My question to the author is, does DHS approve? And is this something that DHS is currently working on with you?
Representative Frederick.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, we've had conversations with DHS on this topic and informed them about the process or the proposal.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Thompson, go ahead, sir.
Chair, the state uses this statute and rule in many ways to limit the development of services and facilities, right? I just wanted to share something that in our community, right outside of some of these makeshift treatment facilities, that thus lie drug dealers outside preying on people who need help. And in some instances, the directors and the people inside of those buildings are in cahoots. I don't know if this is a shocker to anybody here, but when you take that letter of need away, you know, I can be a provider. I mean, so I'm trying to figure out, and then I hate this bill puts us in a position to where, like, it may not be the case in a Representative Frederick's district. That may not be the case. That it may be just the opposite. It may be that they're using this to leave good providers out. But I do know that we have to have checks and balances at some point, and we have to have you have to have a way of finding who's going to do the work. Because like I said, here's the thing is I know too many people that have addictions and need help and can't get the help they need now. And so I know some things are like well-intended, but then they harm our community. And so I just want to make sure that we're doing this the right way, at least putting some in place so that they can have checks and balances as to who is providing. And so, thank you, Chair and Representative Fredericks. I appreciate you bringing this bill. I just wanted to just bring that to your attention, that this bill actually will cause more harm to communities. And then I noticed that hospitals have to have this letter also when they want to put beds in. And so for the state, not for the, I mean, for the federal, on the federal level, they need this letter also, is what I'm hearing. And so I just wanted to like make sure that we're doing it the right way and making sure that nobody's being, you know, a lot of times we have good intentions, but it just doesn't work for certain communities. In this case, this is where one of these bills just doesn't work for the communities that we live in.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Thompson, for providing the input and giving us the broader spectrum of what happens across in different parts of the state. Thank you for that feedback. Representative Frederick, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Thompson. I think the concern that you're pointing out is a good one. I would certainly say that that's not the situation that I want to support or like that I'd want to have happen. I mean, I don't think anyone wants to have a treatment facility go up where it ends up just having a bunch of illegal activity. That's not the intention. What I would say that this process doesn't change anything in regards to that the an applicant would still have to get approval from DHS. And so it's not that anyone can just literally slap a sign on a door and call it a treatment facility. Like that is not what this does. So the approval process for this still stays intact. But Mr. Chair, I would see if Mr. Zervis has any sort of like commentary on the history of this at all.
Mr. Zervis, would you like to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To address the concern around licensing and regulations, the letter of need requirement is one component of the full spectrum of the licensing process. So existing substance use disorder program or a new one would still have to go through the Department of Human Services to get a 245G license for that site. The local zoning and ordinances, fire inspections, all of those things to operate a residential facility or a non-residential facility, all of those components would still be in place. This repeal of this administrative rule is really specific to a prospective license holder from obtaining a letter of recommendation from the county that there's a need for substance use disorder in that community or in that county.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Zervis. I've got a couple of hands up. I see Representative Pearson will be next and then Representative Thompson. So Representative Pearson, if you'd like to go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative.
Representative Pearson, you're breaking up, Representative Pearson.
Okay. His question is clear as a bell, so I'm not sure if it's my connection or your connection. So I'll try to move into an area I think you'll.
I'm seeing a few other heads that we're all having trouble hearing you, Representative Pearson. Can you try moving around to get a better connection there? Okay, certainly. I'll go to Representative Thompson. We'll come back to you, Representative Pearson. Representative Thompson, I see you have your hand up. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, one thing real quick. This House File 1299 also it removes an important provision that advances racial equity in the further development of substance services in our county. I mean, and I know in particular Ramsey County are in the best position to understand the needs, these culturally specific needs of the communities when the community has a say in the services that are brought to their community. And so to remove this letter would remove the community's input also and the ability to have culturally specific, culturally intelligent, and culturally competent providers in our community. And so I just want to be cautious, like, and not to like smash on your bill, because I respect everything that Representative Frederick does and brings to the body. But I just feel like it's really going to cause harm to underserved counties, like even yours. I mean, you remove the community that you serve. And a lot of times we make decisions for the community without the community there, and the outcome, it just doesn't look good for the community. So I just want to make sure that I'm putting that on your plate, Rep. Chair and Rep. Fitcher.
Thank you, Representative Thompson, for that continued input. Representative Frederick, I know, is going to continue working on the bill, and I would encourage that both of you get together along with the counties to make sure that we're not missing people who are underserved right now, to make sure that they have got those services available. Representative Frederick, would you like to respond at all?
I would just say that I think the concerns that are getting brought up are good ones, and I'm more than happy to have conversations offline to see how we can address some of them. Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you, Representative Frederick.
Here, I think that...
Representative Thompson, go ahead, sir.
It'd be a perfect opportunity to have some free lunch with
Chair Frederick. All right, thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Pearson, let's see if we can, if we've got a better connection for you now. Oh, you're still breaking up really badly. Can you maybe text your question to us so we can get it off? Whether I don't know if you've got my cell phone number, Chris McCall's. I see if we can get your question texted over to us, and then we can get it out there so that we can get it addressed. You're still breaking up. We'll try to, if you can get that over to us, we'll get it forwarded and talked about here. While we're waiting for that question and the points from Representative Pearson to come across, what I would suggest is, why don't we adopt the A1 amendment, because we can still continue to talk about it. And at this point in time, I would recommend I would like to take the vote on the A1 amendment. All in favor of Frederick's motion to adopt the A1 author's amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted, and we will try to get these additional questions or comments from Representative Pearson as we're coming across. I see Representative Frankie has his hand up. He might be able to help us with this. Representative Frankie.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you fine. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fredericks. I guess, personally, when a bill comes to this committee, I want to make sure it's at least in good form going out. And I'm getting so frustrated with this process of this Zoom and how these discussions are going, the things that are getting taken offline. Here's where the bill is supposed to be vetted, mm-hmm. and then put forward in a better shape than it was in, and hopefully we take care of those concerns now, or we send it back and ask you to come back. And that's kind of where I'm at right now with this. I mean, I guess I get it. We want to give we want to quit hamstringing our providers with overburdensome regulations. But I agree with Representative Thompson. We also need to make sure we have quality services in our communities. One of my biggest pet peeves is some, you know, and I'm not pointing out any there, but there are fly-by-night organizations. I mean, and not to point to a specific organization, but sometimes we're rushing through legislation to try to do the right thing, and we're ending up with unintended consequences. And I guess I'm also a little frustrated because we didn't hear anything from the counties. Personally, I didn't hear anything from the counties until 5 minutes ago. So this whole process of legislating via Zoom is just, I'm up to here. We need to do things like this and we need to get it right. I mean, and I don't care who you are or where you're from or you're red, blue, or whatever. This committee is dealing with the people of Minnesota and their problems that only some of us can understand. And I want to make sure to get these things right. So I would ask Representative Fredericks that you bring this back and get the language right with the counties and get it done, because I know that at the state level, we push so much onto the counties as far as the responsibility of taking care of these decisions that we make and taking them out of the process, not to say whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, but these mandates that the states pass down to the counties time and time and time again, and a majority of all of our chemical health services and everything like that outside of a lot of our good nonprofits are handled by the counties. The counties are the ones responsible for implementing and providing all of these services. When somebody needs help, where do we point them? We either point them to a nonprofit or to the county. Am I correct, everybody? I mean, so I'm with you, and I agree that we need to reduce some of the burdensome regulations or the overreaching of duplicative processes. Yes, DHS gets their letter, and yes, you're having them notify the counties, but sometimes I think one more check on the box could be the difference between, you know, something good and something bad. So not necessarily a question right now, just more of a statement, and I would ask you just to, you know, get together, get the language a little bit better, and then come back to us. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Fredericks.
Thank you, Representative Frankie. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think the switch over from the letter of need to the notification doesn't strip away the ability for the counties to advocate for what their needs are, whether they are supportive or not supportive. To some of the other points that were made, I think that they are good points, and I would be okay with if we want to delay this bill over instead, possibly here next week, if that would be okay with the chair, and that way we can take the opportunity to maybe bring some more people to the table on some of the issues that were raised, and present again and or update, I should say, the committee next week.
Okay, thank you, Representative Frederick. I see Representative Mueller's hand. We'll go to Representative Mueller, and then I appreciate the opportunity. We would then lay over the bill until next week and take it up next week. Representative Mueller, if you'd like to go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my questions are for you. So this bill, I believe the motion was to send this to the Human Services Committee. And then, so my question is also, if it needs to go there, if this bill is laid over here, is it going to miss the first deadline?
Thank you, Representative Mueller. No, it will not. It made first deadline over in the Senate. So we're fine with being able to take it up next week. Thank you for raising that issue. Not seeing any other hands. We will, the chair lays over House File 1299 as amended, and we'll take it up at next week and come back to give a little bit more time to work on it. I appreciate everybody's input and thoughts on it. I would encourage everybody to get together with the author, Representative Frederick, so that when we come back next week, we'll be able to move it on to the next stop. And just because it would go on to the next stop does not mean that work would stop at that point. Work is going to continue on this as it does with some of the other bills that we've got coming through. I know all our authors that we've had are very committed to making sure we've got good product out. We understand the Zoom environment can make it tough sometimes here. Appreciate the feedback of everyone involved, and we'll look forward to coming back to this bill next week then. With that, this House File 1299 is laid over. We will now move on to the next bill on our agenda, and that is from Representative Baker. This is House File 471. Representative Baker, would you like to move your bill and tell us about it?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the bill. I'm a little hesitant right now with kind of a little jumpy committee here, but we'll see what happens. I think we're 0-1. Let me see right now. But and also to Representative Fredericks, I will be happy to work with you on this as well. This is a tricky stuff to work on. I've worked on this before. I'm happy to work with you on this bill too. So we got to get this right, and I appreciate the chair pausing it for a minute. This is the right thing to do right now. So we've got time. Let's get it right, and let's get it on its way. But to that, Mr. Chair, House File 471 is a really important bill that I've been working on with my friends at Hazleton Betty Ford for several months now. And this is a real attempt at trying to get to unpeeling this onion that so many of us here at different times have understood that we've got too many layers, too many complexities, too many policies that get in the way of helping patients and people in treatment. And what this bill is attempting to do is to stop a lot of duplicative licensing by both the state and a federal a process called joint commissions that you're going to hear about today. Both are highly accredited programs, but I think our friends at DHS have actually said, this might be something we can really seriously look at. I think when a provider is helping patients through this residential treatment and a lot of outpatients, they are distracted a lot by obviously intensive inspections, intensive licensing procedures. And what this bill does, it keeps everything very safe, very accredited. There's ramp offs on this bill so that if for some reason the department gets a call for an alleged or suspected maltreatment, they immediately will step in. Nothing is keeping the state out of their facilities. And the alternative inspection, also the folks have to make sure they maintain their licensing with the other board, or automatically the state will be able to come right back in. So we've got ramp offs. We want to make sure it's safe. And I think this is a really honest attempt to take a hard look at why are we doing it twice in Minnesota for some very highly regarded facilities in our state. This one would apply mostly to companies that we know of, again, New Way, also the Betty Ford and Hazleton Foundation and that whole group. So with that, Mr. Chair, I want to turn over to my testifier, Ms. Lowe's from the Hazleton Betty Ford Foundation. For her testimony, and I'm here to take some questions at the end. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Thank you for moving your bill, House File 471, before us. And then we'll go to Ms. Lowe's to identify herself and who she's with and to start her testimony, please. Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you all to the members for your time today and to Representative Baker for authoring this important and innovative piece of legislation. I'm Jennifer Lozzi. I'm Vice President, General Counsel, and Secretary for Hazleton Betty Ford Foundation. And I'm here today to speak in favor of House File 471. In my role in the foundation, I lead the enterprise-wide legal licensing, accreditation, and compliance teams. Hazleton Betty Ford Foundation is the nation's largest leading nonprofit provider of comprehensive inpatient and outpatient substance use and mental health treatment for adults and youth. Headquartered here in Minnesota, we provide life-saving treatment in states across the country, both through telemedicine and on-site at our 17 locations. Hazleton Betty Ford also collaborates with an expansive network throughout healthcare nationwide supporting access to quality behavioral health treatment in every state. Our organization also encompasses a graduate school of addiction studies, a publishing division, an addiction research center, recovery advocacy and thought leadership, professional and medical education programs, school-based prevention resources, and a specialized program for children who grow up in families with addiction. A program that is now free to all children in America and whose curriculum is being made available internationally to even younger children through our partnership with Sesame Street. As COVID-19 has ravaged our country, we have seen increased needs for both mental health and substance use treatment services. According to a recent survey by the Centers for Disease Control, almost 41% of people who responded said they have struggled with mental health issues related to the pandemic. Additionally, since last spring, we've seen a 14% increase in alcohol consumption and a 41% increase in binge drinking among women. Behavioral health providers are closing their doors, health systems are reducing behavioral health programming, and recovery services are shrinking due to the economic consequences of COVID-19. Hazelden Betty Ford is on the front lines responding to this epidemic for behavioral health during the COVID pandemic, including through embarking on an expansion of mental health services and substance use treatment offerings to new communities, delivered in person and via telemedicine to people who need help. As both services and professionals at Hazelden Betty Ford are state regulated, oftentimes with widely variable licensing and certification requirements from state to state, we see and experience very different regulations and oversight. We support efforts for national standards of care and practitioner licensing, such as the bipartisan bill Representative Morrison has authored in the House for interstate compacts of licensed psychologists here in Minnesota. We also support efforts to improve quality through regulatory deeming for nationally accredited organizations, including the Joint Commission found in HF 471. We are also very pleased that New Way, another large SUD provider in Minnesota, is supportive of this legislation. We understand that DHS has some questions about the bill, and we have committed to continue to work with them on the details of this legislation. As background on the Joint Commission, it accredits many types of behavioral health providers, including substance use treatment providers. These standards are written to establish very robust expectations that focus on safety and quality of service, while leaving many of the specific operational details up to the discretion of each provider, so long as the overarching stringent standards are met. The Joint Commission always defers to and supports state-specific requirements and expects accredited providers to follow all applicable state local laws, regulations, and standards. As an accredited provider, we are held to a much more extensive and robust process than state regulations in many areas, including safety, environment of care, medication management, and quality performance improvement. And our experience across states is that many state legislatures agree and have put in place some form of full or partial deeming status for nationally accredited organizations. This bill, consistent with other deemed licensing rules for Minnesota DHS providers, would offer providers like Hazelden Betty Ford the ability to drive outcomes through consistent and quality-based oversight of the Joint Commission and 245G without duplicating efforts and by eliminating administrative burdens. The bill would allow us to deem into compliance with certain licensing requirements based upon our status and regular survey through our Joint Commission accreditation. Nothing in this bill would preclude DHS from investigating issues that could arise out of one of our facilities. The bill does not create, but would rather reduce the license or regulatory burden by eliminating duplication of effort between the state of Minnesota and the Joint Commission. This bill would also entice other providers to pursue Joint Commission accreditation, having the effect of raising the field of care in the state to the highest standards nationally, because accreditation is quality driven. As the state of Minnesota looks to the future of regulating healthcare, particularly behavioral healthcare, creating and modifying state regulations and statutes through telehealth expansion, interstate compacts, deeming and reciprocity will be key tools in the state's toolbox. The status quo in our field will no longer suffice. People with mental health issues and substance use disorders deserve quality healthcare and treatment for their disease conditions. And this bill is one step in the right direction to make that happen. Thank you again, Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, and members for your time today. And I ask that you please vote in favor of HF 471. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Ms. Losey, for your testimony. Very much appreciate it. Members, we are open for questions, seeing there are no amendments. Are there any questions or comments that people have for the testifiers or for Representative Baker?
Mr. Chair, I believe we have another testifier. I'm sorry. That's the department is on the call for questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McCall. So at this point, I see Representative Frankie has his hand up. Representative Frankie, if you'd like to go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Baker and Ms. Loesch. I guess I'd like to hear from the department on their thoughts on this.
Okay. Who from the department would be, would that be Ms. Grammy, or will you be responding, or will there be somebody else from your department who will talk about? Mr. Burdick. Mr. Burdick, if you'd like to identify yourself and who you're with, and go ahead with your comments, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. As Representative Baker and the testifier indicated, we've been working with the proponents of this legislation. I believe we actually have a meeting set up next week. Our major concern is just to really dig into the weeds here and understand that where our standards are equivalent with the standards in the Joint Commission, so that we can really see where there's overlap and where there are pieces that are unique. We also just want to understand what's the state's role in how and when we are allowed in, as Representative Baker talked about. That's a key piece of this, to make sure the state continues to have that oversight function that's consistent across programs. And then lastly, we're looking at the experience of other states. This is not a novel concept. In fact, in state law, we've got some allowance for this, though we don't exercise that currently. So we're really just trying to get into the nuts and bolts of how will this work operationally, and that's the conversation that will continue over the coming weeks and into the end of session here.
Thank you, Mr. Burdick. Representative Frankie, any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then I would then ask Mr. Burdick, so the agency feels comfortable that at this point the checks and balances are up for discussion, and you feel that this should move forward to have those discussions.
Mr. Burdick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Frankie, yes, we don't have any concern with the overall concept. As I said, the devil's in the details is always with something as complex as this. And so that's the work that's underway right now, to really sink our teeth in with the folks that are pushing for this, to understand where those checks and balances should be. And so that work will continue.
Thank you, Mr. Burdick. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions, Mr. Representative Frankie?
No, I'm good.
All right.
So having a little bit of technical difficulties over here this morning. So
I hear
it's
you.
Frustrating.
No, I hear you, sir. When technology works, it's great. And when it doesn't, it really stinks. So I hear your pain with that. I do not see any other hands up at this point in time. Representative Baker, are there any final comments you would like to make, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I do kind of have another statement and something I want to bring to just show you the commitment of this thing. My conversations and really honest conversations with our DHS experts having to deal with this and digging into this deeper, I think that they really have a commitment to doing this in this level for the Joint Commission accreditation. For members, there's two of them in the state of Minnesota largely. We have the Joint Commission that you've heard about this morning, and we have also what's called CARF. CARF stands for the Commission on Accreditation of Rehabilitation Services, and CARF typically covers most of the rural residential treatment centers. So if you're hearing this conversation and you're thinking we're gonna actually make it easier for some of the rural providers, doesn't really get to that level at this point. And my desire today would have been to try to bring an amendment to the committee, but having conversations with DHS, this is a big lift. This is a big move. And I think what I have also asked DHS is I'm committed to working on the next step next year. So Mr. Chair, I'd like to make sure when we continue our work next year to look at hopefully the Joint Commission licensure process has gone well. It's up and running. We can take a look at the CARF process. It's more broad. There's a little bit more issues with it. And again, DHS has been stressed with our pandemic staffing and just the spreading things out. I respect what they're trying to do. So I want to take this in stages, but we want to do it right. And I think we need to make sure that the agency has the time to do this. So I'm bringing this kind of a heads up for next year, Mr. Chair, and hope that you can support this. But this is a really big step if we can start seriously looking at sort of making life a little bit easier for both DHS in the coming months and years, but also just how we can address this whole issue for the rest of the state during this whole biennium session. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion to move House File 471 on to whatever the next step is that you wanted to see.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Representative Baker renews his motion that House File 471 be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Prost will take the roll.
Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Frankie, aye.
Frankie, aye. Backer. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Hansen. Hansen. Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Katiza Watoon, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Pearson. I think you said aye. Pearson, aye. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Backer. Okay. Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Mr. Chair, there are 11 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. House File 471 is recommended for referral to Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Baker, for your hard work on this, and I appreciate your commitment to continue to work on the details on this for the next stop. All right. At this point in time, I will ask Representative Frederick to take over this chair, seeing my bill is the next bill. Representative Frederick, go ahead, sir.
Members, the last bill on the agenda is House File 1529. Chair Fisher, we do have an author's amendment, and this is the bill's first stop. Would you like to move your bill and amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1529 be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. I'd also like to move the A1 amendment. The main purpose of the amendment is to add a blanket exception to the hospital moratorium for adding new licensed behavioral health beds, so as long as they are available to public health patients. Adding these amendment aligns the language with an amendment that was offered to a different bill in the health committee last week, and it does put it in this bill in the shape I would like it for. I'd like it for the consideration by the division, so I would ask the members to support this motion, and then we can discuss the bill in full.
Chair Fisher moved the A1 author's amendment to put the bill in the shape that he would like. Are there any questions on the motion before we vote? Seeing none, all opposed, or sorry, all in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I go ahead?
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Frederick. Thank you, committee, for hearing House File 1529. We had many discussions earlier this year about the issue around hospital beds in the state. And we know that there are not enough hospital beds right now. And in some instances, the problems are that there are some hospitals that would like to be able to add beds on, and it's a very complicated process. And so what this bill does is several things. Is number one, it makes the process easier. So if a hospital or a hospital system that does not have extra licenses wants to add licensed beds on for behavioral health, it makes it very easy for them instead of having to go through the public needs certification review that they just be able to apply to the commissioner, and the commissioner will be able to award the licenses. It would not change the current system. So if somebody was not going to be able to satisfy the conditions in the bill, they could still follow the review process out there, going to the commissioner, having the hearings, and then coming before the legislature to have those extra beds brought on. On top of that, this bill also makes sure that we are going to be making sure that the hospitals who have in the past come before the legislature and the commissioner and made promises that we want to add bed licenses, we want to make sure that they're fulfilling those promises. And if they aren't, it's giving the commissioner the opportunity to make sure that those promises are fulfilled, or else pulling those licenses in the future, seeing they were made as a condition of getting their original licenses. And this is making sure that hospital systems who have promised to do health behavioral health beds, and if they have not, is making sure that they bring those online. I do know that there are a couple of testifiers on here, and I will also mention to the chair that besides the testifier of Ms. Mary Krinke from the hospital system, I also have Ms. Sue Abderholden from NAMI that also would like to testify.
All right, thank you, Chair Fisher. We'll move on to the testifiers at this point. If Ms. Krinke from the Minnesota Hospital Association, please go ahead. Please identify yourself and receive your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. And my comments today are primarily focused on the A1 amendment that was just offered by Chair Fisher. Our concern is not with the first part of the amendment, which is the exception to the hospital moratorium law if you want to add mental health beds. Our concern is with the additional criteria. Requiring the hospital to have an emergency room precludes Prairie Care from adding mental health beds without going through the exemption process. It may preclude state-operated services from adding mental health beds, given that neither the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center nor the community behavioral health hospitals operate in an emergency room. And we know that these entities provide important mental health services. Emergency rooms are costly points of care, from staff to technology, ready at all times for any critical response. There is no underlying base funding for hospital emergency rooms. New care models should not be explicitly prohibited due to not having an emergency room. For example, just last year, the state allocated $30 million in the bonding bill for counties to partner with providers to create new mental health crisis centers, with the first one up and running in Rochester. Emergency rooms should not be viewed as the only way to access mental health services. New models of care may also include hospitals that solely treat mental health or substance use disorders. While there is currently, and I want to be clear, there is currently a federal Medicaid funding exclusion for institutions for mental disease. We commonly refer to these as IMDs. And these are for facilities that operate more than 16 beds. There is some interest in trying to get this changed or waived under some circumstances with a new presidential administration. Other than COVID, and this is important for, I think, for the committee to understand, inpatient volumes have been dropping steadily for several years, and most hospitals have licensed beds that are not in use. Please do not think that this amendment will swiftly add more mental health beds. Most hospitals could add mental health beds right now without going through the moratorium process. The moratorium law is not the barrier. The real obstacles are low reimbursements from both public and private payers and a lack of mental health professionals, particularly psychiatrists. In closing, I just want to point out one more thing with House File 1529. It gives a lot of discretionary power to a government agency. And I'd just like to ask you all, does the public really want to have a hospital bed that is currently in use and serving your constituents
do you really want that pulled out of service? That is a pretty big hammer. So we would like to ask policymakers to try to think of ways to offer financial incentives or carrots rather than a big stick. And we're afraid that this language in 1529 is a pretty big stick. Thank you for consideration of our comments today.
Thank you for that testimony. Up next is Sue Abderholden from NAMI. Ms. Abderholden, if you will identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. This committee has heard a lot this session about the unmet mental health needs of Minnesotans, both for children and adults. Clearly, our mental health system is not fully built. We need more of everything, a wide array of community-based services and inpatient mental health beds. Committee members heard earlier this year from people with mental illnesses and families with children who waited for excessively long periods of time in an ER for a bed and often were placed far away from home, including people from the metro area traveling all the way to North Dakota. Only in mental health would people wait for hours, days, weeks in the ER for a hospital bed. I can't prove it, but I'm pretty sure if we had people with heart problems waiting in the ER for this long, hospitals would be adding beds to their cardiac units. I want to note that every hospital has to conduct a community needs assessment, and mental health is always in the top three. So this is a known need to our hospitals and healthcare systems, and they have a responsibility to address community needs. We do have a review process in Minnesota to ensure we aren't developing too many hospital beds. This process can be a barrier to new development, especially if a system doesn't have what we would call bank beds. Although we have at least one situation where a hospital went through the review process, promised to add mental health beds, and didn't. We have already one mental health psych unit in the metro area closed last fall, and there are 100 beds in St. Paul that are in jeopardy of closing. We simply can't afford to lose more. This bill tries to address at least some of the barriers for adding beds and providing accountability for other beds. We want to make it harder to close beds that are needed and make it easier to add beds that are needed. If someone promised to add new mental health beds, we need to hold them to that promise. Before someone closes mental health beds, there should be an open discussion, and those beds, if they should close, should not be used for other healthcare issues. I do want to note that in the amendment, it lists for adults, so Prairie Care is just children, so they would not be impacted by this. Minnesota Security Hospital is actually not a hospital, so they wouldn't be impacted. And AMRTC actually has 175 licensed beds, and they're only using about 100, so they have quite a few bank beds. I also want to make it clear that that a psych hospital, so where only mental health and substance use disorders are provided, is not a viable option for many advocates and community mental health providers. Our head is connected to the rest of our body, and when someone has an acute mental health need, we can't just disconnect their head. Without an ER, you can decide who comes onto your unit. Maybe it's only patients from your health system versus others or anyone who comes in the ER, or people who don't have more serious or complex needs. And third, Medicaid doesn't pay for what's called the Institute for Mental Disease, so we can't build beds if we can't, frankly, use Medicaid. And I want to point out, while certainly there's discussion on the federal level, this we're talking about billions of dollars. This includes paying for any huge state institutions that we have in the South where they don't have community hospitals. And this is a very controversial issue among advocates and providers on the national level as well. And while increasing access to community services is definitely needed, it will be many years before we can say we can decrease the number of mental health hospital beds. For someone who is suicidal, they need 24-hour care, not 4 or 5 hours in a partial hospitalization program. For someone who is psychotic, perhaps catatonic, they can't be sent home at night. We have cardiac rehab services in the community, but we aren't cutting inpatient cardiac care. We know this bill isn't the only answer. The rates paid by Medicaid are much lower than private insurance. One hospital system loses over $6,000 per episode for hospital care for someone with psychosis and closer to $9,000 under Medicare. Even with depression, they are losing about $3,000 per episode under Medicaid. We certainly need to increase the inpatient rate for Medicaid along with addressing workforce shortages, but we also need to make it as easy as possible for hospitals to add mental health beds and make it harder for them to close them. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. I don't see any other testifiers lined up, so we can move to questions. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for the author, Chair Fisher. So I'm really confused now. We've got two, I would say, very respected organizations that are sort of saying two different things. And I'm wondering, you know, when I first saw the bill, I think it makes sense to want to expand our mental health beds or behavioral health beds. I think, gosh, I thought there was a shortage, a real shortage. And I'm hearing from the hospital association, Ms. Krinke, that says, and I think that, you know, seeing the whole state footprint like they do in their view, they're saying there are plenty of beds. So maybe Mr. Chair Fisher, have you talked to both of the of these parties ahead of time? And do we know the real situation of what the census is for the beds? What is the need for this? Because I really do want to dive into the accuracy of what both testifiers have sort of said today. And I certainly offer up any other comments, but I just wanted to, you know, from the author's standpoint, what are you seeing here now this morning, and how should members kind of take this?
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Frederick, Representative Baker. Good questions that you're asking. Yes, I've talked to people on both sides of the issue here, and in some ways they can both be right. And where it comes down to is we do have a lot of licensed beds out there that are not in use right now. That is a fact. It is also a fact that there are some hospitals, Regions is a perfect example. You've got St. Joe's closing everything down across the street. Regions doesn't have any extra licenses. And so they've got to go through this long, convoluted process to be able to add beds in. And so, you know, that is an example right there. It goes right to what Sue is saying, is we've got to be able to make it easier for people to come in, particularly if they want to put in the behavioral health beds. We know it's a problem, so let's make it easy when a hospital wants to add those beds coming on, knowing there's this huge shortage. You know, we heard in committee earlier this year that the system operates at 90% capacity, and we heard so many stories, and I've had people call me since, about how often they're sitting in the emergency room because there's nowhere to go. They're sitting in the emergency room and being said, we can't treat you. They sit there for hours or days on end with no treatment, or they're being sent home with no treatment at all. We wouldn't stand for this. If somebody had a broken leg and said, oh, we'll get to you in a couple of days, there'd be an outrage here. We should have the same outrage in this area. Now, this bill will not fix everything. I can also say that in terms of the way the bill is set up right now, is this makes it easier for people to get them if they've got an emergency department. And the reason we hit on the emergency department is because that's usually the closest place when people are having crisis that they can go to. You know, it's the entry point, it's where they're going to go to, and then if needed be, they get referred from there. In a lot of cases, hospitals sometimes will have those beds in their system. So these are part of the problems, but it's also a funding problem. We have to address eventually that underlying funding problem. Well, we've heard it from both testifiers. We've all heard it loud and clear. That's one of the things that we're working on behind the scenes, not only for this issue, but for the entire mental behavioral health area, whether it's mental health beds, whether it's substance use. We know that we've got to continue working and all of us coming together to make sure that we're pressing that forward so that we can lift it up, making sure that we're addressing the funding problem, which will help bring beds on, and also removing barriers that are out there so that hospitals that want to add it are able to, and those who made promises to our community saying that they would add them, holding up to their promises. And it's important that we take a look at the whole hospital moratorium thing, because while it's set up to figure out how to best meet the needs of the public, many times the hospitals are eventually having to make the decision on a business issue. And it's important that we keep the underlying community's needs in it and make it easier for us to be able to add beds, because right now it's real easy to take away beds. As an example, I'll hold up is the Fairview system in November took 90 COVID beds out of use at a time that we were going into the pandemic and the hospital system became full. That was a business decision for them. But at the same time, where was the community's needs to be able to do that? You know, we went into the pandemic, the hospital beds in December overloaded, and at the same time, we had a system that could easily take 90 beds out of the system. The moratorium system is broken and needs to be reformed. This is one of the ways that we can start reforming that system so that the needs of the community are being protected out there when we need it most.
Representative Baker, any follow-up?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you for that, Chair Fisher. I guess you're right. We've got other problems that are causing this issue, and I think largely it's the reimbursement model. I think when we start getting into telling businesses, whether it's a hospital system or whatever it is, to tell them how to run their business, how to pay their employees. It's all because we think we can do it better than they can. And I don't think that's a place for government to be. Now, saying that today, it doesn't mean that I'm not on the make the world simpler train, right? I just passed a bill out of this committee that makes it simpler. And I just want to better understand for all the members here that want to vet this out to maybe understand it. We're getting into an area forcing, we're not forcing anybody to get new beds. I get that. We're making it easier for them. And I just want to make sure we give Ms. Krinke the chance to maybe say, and this is maybe for me, I want to know more clarity. If you can tell us, Ms. Krinke, give us the census overview of what you're seeing, whether it's metro-wide, statewide, because again, location is really important to people getting help right away. So I really support both sides of this, but I want to understand where you see the bed census right now, Ms. Krinke, in your situation.
Ms. Krinke?
Thank you, Chair Fisher and Representative Baker. It's really hard right now in the COVID experience to really judge this. Have people been afraid to come into the emergency room because of fear of COVID? At the same time, there has been increased mental health. I don't deny many of the things that Ms. Adlerholden said. I mean, right now with COVID and the isolation and depression that has been going on, there is an increased need for mental health services. So for us to judge right now the question that you're asking, I do think it's just, there's some things that I do think that are important for the committee to understand. 78 of our hospitals are critical access hospitals. And by federal law, if they want to stay a critical access hospitals, they are limited to 25 beds. So for most of the rural members of the legislature, your hospitals are critical access hospitals. They can't add any more beds, okay? So we're in a situation where even if they wanted to add more beds to their service lines, they can't, or they would lose their critical access status, okay? So that's just an underlying fact that people need to understand. Those hospitals can't add more beds, okay? So that's just part of the rural healthcare delivery system. Now, other side of this equation is most, and Regions is an exception, Representative Fisher. They were an old public government hospital, Ramsey Hospital, and they weren't affiliated with any other hospitals, and they had no bank beds. So they are up against their licensed bed capacity fairly regularly. Most of the larger hospitals in the state have a fair number of banked beds because it used to be, you go in for a hip surgery or knee surgery and you were in the hospital for 2 weeks. Well, now that's all being done. A lot of that's being done at ambulatory centers or an outpatient basis. So our inpatient volumes have dropped over the last 12 years. In rural Minnesota, it's dropped by 27%. Metro area, it's dropped by 12%. So we have extra beds, okay? This is not a question of the moratorium law. The question really is fundamentally, how come there's not more mental health beds? And that gets into the issues of financing and staffing. And we have hospitals that say, we just can't find a psychiatrist. So, you can tell us to add a mental health bed, but who are we gonna get to staff it? And unless you have somebody who can write a prescription, unless you have a psychiatrist or an advanced practice registered nurse or, someone who could write a prescription, it's really hard to provide mental health services on an inpatient basis without the staff availability. And I know I could point this way and you all could point this way, but it fundamentally, it's been an underfunded system for a decade. And so it's not something that you can easily switch on and say, okay, we need to have more mental health beds. It's hard to do that. So. We're concerned about the language if I can make one more comment, the moratorium law has been in place for over 25 years, and there are currently 28 exceptions in the law. And this was long before I was at the Hospital Association. And there's a lot of exceptions to the moratorium that have been granted. And so I don't know what all the promises were or what's been made. And so how do you go back and say, if you didn't fulfill that promise, we're going to now yank that bed from your community?
That's a pretty heavy stick. And so I worry, well, those beds are doing something else positive for the community. Maybe they're, you know, trauma beds, or maybe they're surgical beds, or most recently, maybe they were COVID beds. I don't know what those beds are being used for, but to say you're going to take beds out of a community that are currently in use, there's got to be something in between. Is there a warning, or is there a penalty, or is there something other than we're going to yank those beds from your community? That's the biggest stick there is. So I just think that the bill right now is pretty heavy handed, to be honest. So.
Representative Baker, anything else?
You know, Mr. Chair, no, not really. I think that does give me more clarity. I think knowing, you know, the author of the bill, Chair Fisher, I know that he knows this is not an easy lift and there's a lot of issues on both sides. And I think we need to keep working on this. We've heard that same story. We don't want to lose beds for heart patients, for broken arms. We are just, you know, in that quandary to get this thing right. So reimbursements are a huge part of this for everybody. I know that it does make it all easier, and it's not, that's even more challenging. But I just wanted to make sure I had clarity on this, because I know it's got a lot more work to do. And thank you very much for both the testifiers for giving this to us. So that's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Baker. Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment. I want to thank Representative Fisher for bringing this bill forward, working on it. I just think this is a critical conversation that has to continue. It has to continue. As I've had conversations with local leaders about the prospect of losing. So I'm in Northfield, roughly an hour south of the cities. I've had conversations with local leaders about the prospect of possibly losing 100 mental health beds. They're in shock and are wondering how, like, what steps do we need to take to protect our needs? And it seems to me that our role here is to make sure we're protecting the needs of the public, because the reality in Northfield, so in my pastoral capacity, I've sat with families in the emergency room for a long, long time as they've been waiting to get proper placement for a loved one going through a mental health crisis. I've also sat with families as their loved ones being sent to Fargo 4 hours away, because the social workers have come out and explained they just can't find mental health beds. And this happens regularly in Northfield. It's happening to families with their loved ones. It's happening to college students who are transitioning to college. It's not a tenable situation. And my concern is that as hospital systems get larger, they're making decisions based more on efficiency than on what the need of the community is. And we have to make sure that we're protecting the needs of the community. And so there's no doubt this is a difficult conversation. It's complicated, but the conversation has to continue. And we have to make choices in it. And I think, you know, our guiding principle needs to be, are we protecting the needs of the public or not? So I thank Chair Fisher for working on the bill. It's a conversation that has to continue.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. Representative Franke.
Thank you, Chair Fredericks. Thank you, Chair Fisher. I know you and I have had multiple discussions over this over the last week or so. And I want to thank the testifiers, Ms. Krinke and Ms. Abderholden. This is a large conversation. And I hearken back to the beginning of this committee when we were doing the overviews and the disparity between the amount of SUD and mental health beds overall just struck me. And I guess I understand part of the conversation about where do we go when we're in crisis. I mean, as human beings, we are conditioned that we go to the emergency room. And that's where we seek that help, especially people. If I'm not knowledgeable or I don't have the connections or things are not promoted to me, that's where I'm going to go when I'm in crisis. If the police aren't going to help me or somebody isn't going to help me, I'm going to go to the emergency room. So there's a lot to have about this conversation, and I want to thank you, Chair Fisher, for your passion around this. I also do understand the hospitals understanding about this, that it's a cyclical situation. We need more mental health professionals. We need better reimbursements. We all know these things. And I think, you know, it had been mentioned that this is a big stick. And I think maybe we need the big stick to bring in the other parts of those conversations to get something at the end of it that's actually going to help. Chair Fisher, I have a question about the bill. How would this bill impact or help the situation with the closing of the beds at St. Joe's?
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Frederick. In terms of actually what St. Joe's would do, St. Joe's under this bill could still close down their beds there, and this bill would not stop that. However, what this bill would do is it would make it easier for example, regions to be able to go through and add beds without having to go through the licensing process that we have right now or any other hospitals that might fit in that situation. As we're hearing, this is not, and I never intended this as being a panacea to cure all. It's to start the conversation. And in some areas, while it's not a lot, doing whatever we can incrementally to help make it easier for hospitals who don't have that capacity to be able to add that capacity and bring them on. And for those who want to bring them on, but they don't meet these conditions, they still have the regular review process. And as we've heard, they've got the licenses available. So we want to make sure that we're continuing using this as the conversation to move forward and making it a situation that we don't ignore everything. I was hoping for this robust conversation. It was missing at the last committee stop. It's great to have it at this committee stop, because it shows all the issues that we have to deal with as we go forward, is that we can't leave anything behind. And I'm very open to continuing the discussions, not only on these bills, but also the other issues that are around in the background, is what can we do to take a look at those funding things going forward.
Any follow-up, Representative Frankie?
Thank you, Chair Frederick. Thank you, Chair Fisher, for your willingness to listen and work this forward with understanding.
All right, Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to point out that this problem and this discussion, I just think we have to recognize that this is the problem when our healthcare system is a for-profit system. And when revenue is being raised and we're doing things based on taking care of people, shouldn't be business. It should be something that we're providing to our citizens. And I think that's what we need. And so I just think it's really important that we acknowledge this, that this is one of the things that comes with our healthcare system not being something that's a right. And, I'm looking right now at the revenues of all these healthcare systems in the billions of dollars. And I think we do have to have these conversations, and it is going to be hard, but this is what it looks like when profit is a factor, and as we try to take care of people in our state. And so I thank you, Chair Fisher, for bringing this bill forward.
All right, thank you for those comments. Representative Baker.
Just a quick follow-up to Representative Becker-Finn. I get that comment, but whether you're a nonprofit or profit, you have to have money to pay the bills. And I think that the issue that we're having with healthcare in general is it is confusing. It's gotten so expensive. And what we have to do is we just have to make sure that the models that are there are under the rules that we have today, whether it's profit or nonprofit. I just think they have to make sure that we as government isn't forcing them in a place that will not work in a business model, whether it's nonprofit or profit. It's, again, profit should not be a dirty word. We've got to have investments to put back into our facilities. We've got to have that. Again, there should be a level of fairness and no price gouging. I'm all on that. I was on the pharmaceutical stuff, and we've got to rein in a lot of problem things right now. But I'm just saying, I just wanted to make sure that for me, I'm not saying that that's an issue with it's profit or nonprofit. They have to have a return on these investments and these employment costs that they have, because again, there's so many things that are making those decisions happen. So I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to point out that if the presidents and CEOs of these nonprofit healthcare organizations are making $2.8 million a year, $2.4 million a year, $12.8 billion in revenue, it's pretty messed up to say that the folks that Representative Lippert was just talking about who can't be near their family member because they have to be moved to a hospital that's 4 hours away while they're in crisis. And we're saying that this is too hard. We can't figure out how to do this. At the same time that we're seeing billions of dollars being made by organizations that are supposed to be nonprofits, then we have to start shifting to putting those families and those people in crisis first. I think you can still pay the bills. Maybe you could reduce your $3.6 million compensation in order to pay the bills, so that we can make sure that we are doing these things that our communities and Minnesotans need.
Representative Lippert. You're muted.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mr. Chair. So I would just make a comment as to, you know, what I see is the fundamentally different questions, two fundamentally different questions. So the what I imagine is the fiduciary question of the board of a hospital system is what are the best choices for the financial future of this institution? Whereas our fundamental question is, what are the choices we need to make for the health and well-being of the people of Minnesota and the people in our communities? And those are not always going to be the same. And I think, you know, what I hear in Representative Becker-Finn's comments are the places where profit in the healthcare system moves us away from the fundamental question and our fundamental responsibility as representatives in government, which is how do we meet the well-being and needs of the people of Minnesota? And I think this bill is moving forward a very important conversation, and there are going to be difficult choices here, but we need to choose for the needs of Minnesotans.
All right, not seeing any other questions at this point, I would turn it over to Chair Fisher for final word.
Thank you, Chair Frederick, and thank you to the entire committee and to the testifiers about the robust discussion we've had on not just the bill, but the underlying factors that are driving in our system is making sure that our hospitals can continue to afford to continue to provide the services and make sure that the services are out there. This bill is one small part of the large egg of trying to address the behavioral health issue. And I will continue conversations, look forward to continued input on the bill on 1529. I think it has done a great job of getting the conversation going. This is one that will continue the conversation as we go forward. It's very simple about allowing hospitals who meet the needs in here as the exceptions of having a quick off-ramp to be able to add hospitals beds in. And for those who don't meet the conditions out there, they would still have the opportunity to follow the current system to be able to add those beds into the system. And it's making sure that we're not leaving anybody behind. We know that most people coming in are coming through the emergency department system. And so that's critical to have that part of it. We also want to make sure that those who are on Medicaid are still being able to get the same services they come through. And that's what the clause does, clause 29 that we add. And if they aren't able to meet those clauses, they're still able to go in. Your Prairie Cares of the world are still able to go through the regular process to add beds. So that is still open to them. I want to thank the committee for their discussion, and I ask for your vote for this to continue on to the next process. Thank you.
All right. That Chair Fisher renews his motion that House File 1529, as amended, be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Gross, will you take the roll?
Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Aye.
Frankie, aye. Backer.
Backer votes aye.
Backer, aye. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Hansen. Hansen. Katiza-Watoon.
Aye.
Katiza-Watoon, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Pearson.
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, loud and clear, aye. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Mr. Chair, there are 12 ayes and zero nays.
There being 12 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails. House File 1529 as amended is recommended for the referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, members. Chair Fisher, any announcements before we adjourn for the day?
Yes, Chair Frederick, thank you. First of all, I want to once again thank everybody for the hard work today. We've had several bills up. I thought we've had some very great discussions. I appreciate the respectful and thoughtfulness that went into all the questions that were asked out there, the testimony that was provided, and the hard work that's going into these bills that will continue. We will have one more hearing next Wednesday. There are a few bills that appear to be on track to be in there, along with the bill that we did lay over that we will take up next week and then continue that bill on in its process. And with that, that is all the announcements I have today. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Chair Fisher. There being no further business before the division today, we are adjourned.